Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the HR Leaders Podcast, the show where we explore the future of work with industry experts and HR executives and world-leading global brands. Today, we're joined by Chuck Davis, who's the HR Director at New Balance Athletics. Welcome to the show, Chuck. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. Hi, Chris.
Thanks for joining us. Where are you tuning in from?
I am visiting my father down in Florida. Yeah.
Oh, nice. How's it there?
It's hot and humid. I don't know that Florida is the place you want to be in the midsummer, but very steep.
Yeah, we're actually having a bit of a heat wave for once in the UK today, and I'm suffering a little bit, I'll be honest, just at 35 degrees. So it's pretty hot for us, and so we don't have air conditioning. My home doesn't have air conditioning, so it's going to be a hot day. What about you? You're all right, though? You seem like you're pretty cool.
Yeah, those without air conditioning in Florida are going to have a really tough summer. So I'm okay, though. Thank you.
Before we jump in, give everyone a bit of a background to yourself, personally, your journey to where we are today.
Sure. Yeah. So I work for New Balance in Boston, our headquarters. I've been there 10 years. I've been in HR more years than I care to admit. I say, over 25 years. I spent about 9 years with Fidelity Investments in the mutual fund industry in Boston. I spent a few years in technology, software consulting. Started my career in recruiting. And, I got into the profession with an economics major, thinking I was going to go into banking. And then suddenly just saying, I'd like one of those jobs. Who's doing the hiring? And that's how I started my profession, getting into recruiting and people. And so, yeah, I will say this, though. The last 10 years at New Balance, it's fast-paced, moving fast. But this last 6 months has just been a ride. And, it's just been amazing. So, anyway, I've enjoyed your podcast and just like to make sure I'm staying connected with what's going on. And, if I could share some insights, it might be helpful.
Amazing. I was super excited when you replied back, right? Because New Balance is a company that I think we all relate to and what I love about it is it comes in waves, like, with fashion. So like when we're younger, it's really cool and trendy to have New Balance, and then it goes through like a certain wave and it comes back into fashion as well. Like right now in Europe, in the UK, everyone's wearing New Balance right now, and it rides these different waves. So it must be quite interesting for you over the last 10 years to see that. Do you know what I'm referring to? Right. Yeah.
Here's what's interesting.
It's like nostalgic.
I keep going back to the pandemic of what we've learned, but our CEO, Joe Preston, he was talking over a year ago how important it was to be agile, and speed was really important. Speed for us is just like you mentioned. The fashion industry, if you're slow to market, you lose.
Yeah. So
you have to be innovative. You have to be quick to market. You have to go to market fast. And at the same time, that means our people working for us have to think about doing things differently. How do we change the shape of how we get things done? And some of that is changing the organizational structure. A lot of times it's just simply doing things differently. And but it's been, it is a speed driven industry. As much as we're in the fashion industry, we're also in the industry with making products that people will find long lasting, whether they're considered stylish or not.
It's a super interesting industry to go into, and it's just sort of riding those waves, but no one really thinks about obviously in the back end or the supply chain, the agility, the speed you need to make sure you can stay competitive as well is super important. Obviously the topic of the episode, balancing business priorities with empathy, how have you been supporting your associates and their health and safety and well-being during the pandemic?
Well, we've been learning. I think at the beginning, we all were just, discussing what to do. And the first thing we did was, let's just say, let's just make sure whatever we do, we communicate, make sure that everybody understands where we're headed. So part of it was, it seems like a long time ago, it was only a few months ago, and our business, it was our retail stores. There's like 2,500 retail stores around the globe.
Wow, you're 2,500.
Yeah, about 100 in North America, but a lot more outside of North America. That's huge. We had to close them. Like, you can't come into our stores when the state government says you can't. And even when the state government says you can, in many cases, we were thinking it was unsafe. So we pulled out of some of these malls sooner than most of the governments told us you had to. But more importantly, our wholesale business, we have other retailers, thousands of them, that closed, multi-door, big stores. So, The impact for us is we had to furlough several people around the globe. We didn't lay people off. We furloughed, just riding out the storm and trying to figure out. And then we had a few things that we needed to do. So for us, it was empathetic was first, let's just make sure we can control what we know we can control. We can't control what we don't know. We still don't know what's going to happen.
Yep,
and what
exactly.
We knew was people were struggling at home. Their kids were at home and sometimes toddlers while they were trying to work. And so we just immediately, it didn't take much long time, said, do what you can. You know what? Do what you can to get work done. If you are able to work a few hours instead of eight, that's okay. So we just understood that there were certain issues going on. And we think about parents, you know, there were moms that industry-wide, I think they're just disproportionately the primary caregivers, you know, in not all families, but in many cases, we were sympathetic there. And empathy for us was allowing that flexibility and allowing them to give the you know, not to have to quit their jobs because they're caring for because their kids. Right?
Yeah, no one should have to make that choice. Yeah.
And then a lot of our leaders had kids, some young, some are older. And a lot of people were not struggling, but just challenged. It was a lot of work just to care for the kids and then get a job done. One idea we had that was kind of fun, was different. We had a parents' day. It was right around Mother's Day. Now, again, it seems like a long time ago. And so some would say, well, that's not fair. I'm working and multitasking. I don't have kids. Well, this is the new normal. It's not about being fair, just doing the right thing. We asked the parents to take the day off, and people loved it. And not everyone, but we just felt unapologetic and just felt like the right thing to do. And then the other part of it is safety for us. Safety has been like sincere, like really being careful to keep people healthy and safe. At New Balance, it means we're not ready to go back into our facilities yet all over. We've gone back into our Shanghai office, you know, after calculated risk by sequencing the number of people that go in. Mm-hmm. But in the US and Canada, we're going to hold off. I don't see us going into the buildings at all this year.
Really?
With the exception of a few essential
people. Workers. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's some people in IT that need to be there. And of course, those in our distribution centers, they've been workhorses for the last several months. Our manufacturing facilities were closed for some time. Now they're back open. Yeah, we just talked about it and felt like working from home for us has been productive. Matter of fact, it's been very productive. So we'll just continue to, and for us, it was about safety.
Yeah. Are you now in a position where you're looking at, I'm sure like many others, you're rethinking systems, processes, ways of working. Have you sat down with the leadership team and said, no, we need to rethink this? Do we give people the flexibility to work, you know, 80% from office, 20% home? What's your consensus? Or are you still in conversations about what that may look like?
Yeah, we are still in discussion. Right now, we thought that we would just communicate that because we know it's been productive working remotely. For the most part, it's been very productive.
How are you measuring that, though? Just out of curiosity, how are you measuring that it's been productive?
That's a great question. We're trying to identify whether or not there's tools out there that would help us measure it. So today what we're doing is we're doing less with looking at job descriptions, more with doing what's getting done. And so part of the way we can do that is agility for us has been working on these pods. So we would have like, we call them 90-day sprints. We just focus for 90 days. There's a group of people working on initiatives. And so it doesn't really matter what your job description, even your title.
Yeah, of course. That's about the output.
It is fascinating. So we will find out, you know, through these 90-day sprints, how we can get work done better. And part of that was, you know, during the pandemic, part of these 90-day sprints were about how we go to market when we had a plethora of inventory that we couldn't ship. What we're going to do with that? We had 90-day sprints on that. Actually, in the U.S., we made masks. You know, I guess this would go back to empathy. Empathy is not just about your associates, but the community as well. And in Boston, we suffered with the pandemic. There were a lot of people dying from the coronavirus and people were short supplies. So we knew that we had these manufacturing facilities available and these pods. There was a team that just quickly, super fast, prototyped a mask, got it tested, approved, and we started making like 100,000 a day.
Really?
Now we have too many. Now we don't need them all.
Everyone keeps saying that now. We've got too many masks.
Yeah. We took a problem into an opportunity. And I will tell you, you know, here's the impact. I don't support the manufacturing in my role. I'm on the commercial side of the business.
Yeah.
But I was so proud. You know, I'd have neighbors and friends tell me how good it felt to have New Balance stepping in when, you know, sister was a nurse or they had relatives that were having a tough time. And it just felt really good. And that plays itself out. And again, our CEO will say, look, if you take care of people in the company, they will take care of the company. And, you know, I think it's been going on for a long time, but I saw that pretty evident during this pandemic.
Yeah. I love the idea of those pods, by the way. Do you think you're going to, because I'm sure the innovation, like you already mentioned, that come out of that. How did you work beforehand, by the way, to now with the pods? What does that look like?
We had the typical org structures. We'd have teams of people in a commercial business. It would be a merchandising function. We'd have product teams and our retail business. You know, I'd say to a fault, maybe too siloed in many cases. Yeah.
It's a normal.
People in the same role working together. You know, think of it like if you were to use the analogy of a football soccer team. Mm-hmm. It'll be like all the forwards, all the strikers working together.
Yeah.
The pod team is like everyone. You got, you know, your halfbacks and forwards and goalkeeper, everybody literally on the same team, but different roles. Mm-hmm. And it's been good. I think a lot of people have learned as they've gone. We've learned a lot as a company. But you kind of have to think about, forget the titles, forget job responsibilities, just focus on what needs to get done and it'll get done.
100%. Yeah. You think you're going to stick with that model for now on moving forward?
Yeah, it's working. We're going to continue with it. At the same time, we still have thousands of people that are working for us. We have to continue to think about what that looks like from an org structure perspective.
Mm, of course.
And how we manage through that. So part of it is how we get things done and then who's going to do certain things. So
it's a big shift. it's definitely a big shift. So in terms of the working from home policy, you haven't really sort of ironed out exactly what that's going to look like. You're still working on that.
Yeah, we're still working through it. Right now we're saying, I would expect next year, we're going to be super flexible working from home. And I'll just give you an example. Like last year, we were talking about the business and we're like, okay, we need to be agile. We need to be fast. And then at the same time, business leaders were asking for headcount. And we're like, geez, we don't need more heads. What we need to do is find capacity. So I grabbed a group of business partners, HR business partners, and we just captured a lot of ideas and thoughts about how we could create capacity. We had maybe 50 new headcount requests. We know we can only get about 6 approved, so we can prioritize them. But what we can do, we can get more approved if we repurpose and think about getting things done. And part of it is a long way of saying part of our problems in Boston, traffic has been its own pandemic. It is, you know, it takes many of our workers an hour and a half just to get into the office.
It's the same with London. Yeah. If you drive into central London every day, it's just a nightmare.
So we were thinking, hey, if we increase our flexibility on working remotely,
you attract more talent.
We could attract more talent. We get more capacity. It's win-win. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that was a year ago. Now we've certainly seen how it has manifested itself to being more productive. But anyway, that capacity planning exercise turned out to be really good. We just looked at how people are getting work done. And in some cases, managers were simply asking people to stop doing things and see what happens, you know? And then we found out that sometimes the work that they were doing really wasn't adding value. And then at the same time, we were, you know, unapologetic assigning more responsibilities. And in most cases, you know, people think their teams are at 100% capacity, everyone's loaded up. But if you add a few things more, they'll find a way to get the right work done and usually be appreciative for it. And that's what we did. Now we're doing more and more of that because we have to.
But like you just said, though, I found as well in the past and even certainly of running this company, sometimes it's not about adding more. It's about taking away things that are not adding value. People are just doing things that are just for the sake of doing them that are not actually moving the needle or adding any value. So before we start adding anything new now, we always sit down with the team. It's like, what are we doing which is going to move the needle? And what are we doing that we're spending so much time that actually isn't adding that much value and taking that away? And all of a sudden, we freed up so much more capacity with the team as well. So I think a lot of...
This episode of the HR Leaders Podcast was brought to you by our friends at Achievers. Two-thirds of employees have one foot out the door in 2024, and the top reason to job hunt? Better compensation. But money isn't everything. The Achievers 2024 Engagement and Retention Report reveals that employees crave emotional salary too. What does emotional salary mean? And what are the ways to increase emotional salary to engage and retain top talent? Learn more about motivating your employees beyond just pay by visiting achievers.com/HR leaders. Again, that's achievers.com/HR leaders. Let's get back to the episode.
A business leader who sat down with someone who was creating some reports, really nice reports. And it took a while. I mean, we have technology that creates reports, but by the time you get the interpretation and present it, it could take some work. And yeah. She said, look, why don't you just stop creating them? Oh, no, but people rely on them. Well, just see what happens. And so they did. And you know what happened? Nothing.
No, I missed it.
No. People didn't ask for it. And it just created this opportunity.
That's a great example. That's such a good example. Yeah. That's a great. There's so many. Yeah, I'm sure people listen on LinkedIn. Like, there's so many examples of those activities that no one really cares or wants to have. But it's just like, it's been there for years. So you just keep doing it, but it's not adding any real value as well. 100%. Talking of empathy, leading with empathy, what kind of support did you provide your leaders? Because they're now managing remotely. You know, it's very different, right? I struggled early on with our team managing remotely and kind of leading with empathy, finding that balance. Did you do any training with your leaders? What did that look like?
Video has been really helpful for us because I think part of it is it allows us to build the trust. You know, you would see in many of our video meetings, kids sitting on laps, you know, or teams sharing, you know, cocktails at the end of the day together. It created an environment where it was trustworthy, it was open, it was transparent, it was good. When it comes down to using that for empathy, it was about like looking your associates in the eye and telling them, you know, it's okay to take time off. It's okay at 2 p.m. to go walk the dog, go on a hike, go on a run and disappear for 90 minutes. Don't worry about it. Just get the work done, you know, and just you put yourself in their shoes. For our retail business, when we reopen stores, we're very careful to reopen. We don't want to reopen too early. Not sure what would happen. When we did, we reached out to the store managers, our leaders, you know, talked with them about, you know, what it was like. And if people were afraid to come back, we were okay. So just stay out. We'll keep your benefits rolling. And in many cases, they received some support from the government. They certainly did in the U.S., Canada. And we kept that going for quite a while. But we didn't want our managers to answer questions about healthcare. You know, if somebody
had
questions about being sick and symptoms, we just we wanted to take that burden off them. But we still wanted the associate to have like a level of support. So we created essentially a team. I call it the COVID team, but the COVID czar that was available, readily available to reach out to people who were either showing symptoms or who met someone that tested positive. And so we could pivot. So because a lot of us in HR, we were quickly turning into safety managers and nurses and, you know, like caretakers. But to give that to a central team that could track and manage, and it was good. The empathy for that was people felt good about it when they received a call. Generally, like, hey, good, thank you. I'm feeling better, but to have someone reach out. And the managers, of course, shouldn't be in the business of being doctors and, you know, medical practitioners.
Yeah. To that point, I think I mentioned on another show, one of my closest friends said to me, I said to him, how do you think your company is, you know, supported you during this? And he said, you know what? I get a call every week from someone called Jenny from the team. He never met Jenny. And she just calls to check in, see how are you doing, Ben? How are you? And he says to me, I've shared more with Jenny during the last few months than I have with some of my closest family and friends in terms of his anxiety, his kind of what he's going through, because he's, you know, he's struggling because he's actually at home alone, very isolated. And he's like, I don't know what I would have done without Jenny calling me every week.
I heard you on the podcast with Dave Ulrich, and I really admire what he's done to the profession. But you know, it's interesting recently when he was talking about, so a lot of times that's how he ends his coaching meetings and just checking in with executives, say, how are you doing?
Yeah.
And he, you know, just asking the question, you never know what you're going to get. And it's from the heart. I think it does hold true that it will help everybody, help the person you're asking, help the team, help the company. The mm-hmm. more you can put yourself in somebody else's shoes and provide support. But at the same time, we have a business to run. We've got to make tough decisions. We've got to get work done. The sacrifice for many of us is long hours, you know, many days a week. There's no more clocking in at 8 to 5 and showing up. And, you know, it's all about getting the work done. So we're not apologizing for that. We're just saying that is increasingly more important now. And so you have to balance that empathy with making sure the business is healthy and growing in the right direction.
Yeah. Mubarak on LinkedIn made a good comment. Thanks for your comment, Mubarak. He said that we have to proceed with caution because with COVID, a lot of jobs were threatened. So some people naturally attempt to make the point that they add value. So they're kind of working like crazy. And I've got I know some examples of some of my friends that are just working, you know, morning to night, not leaving the chair, making sure that they're over delivering. And because they're so scared of losing their job, we have to be super careful about that as well. I personally suffered from it. Not that I was going to, you know, I'm the CEO and founder, but still I was working so much that I got, my anxiety started coming back. I had a panic attack. My wife came in and said, what's wrong? I was like, I don't know. I'm feeling like I'm going to have a heart attack. And it's because I'd sat in my chair for 2 weeks straight, not left, not going, no exercising, not eating well, not sleeping well. I was just working myself sick, literally. So we always have to be super careful or mindful about that, that there will be employees that are just working like crazy and not turning off.
Yeah, for sure. That's a good comment. And, you know, to that end, I would just give an example at New Balance. Again, I'll go back to our CEO. I love the idea that, you know, it doesn't take courage to take time off. It takes courage for managers to support it when you need people working.
Yeah.
And so taking time off is good. So our CEO just goes out, you know, every couple of weeks with a video globally. And one time he just took a week off and he just shared, I took a week off and it felt good. So inspiring others to take time off, we'll find a way to get the work done. And so not to let the foot off the gas, but just, you know, make sure you find time to, for yourself to balance.
It's important. You know, my co-founder Shane's off today and he said to me yesterday, oh, actually, I think I'm going to do some work. I was like, no. And Ivan, my producer who's listening, was really good to say, no, Shane, today is your day off. Chris, Ivan, Esher, we've got it. You could just turn off. And it's super hard as well to turn off and step away. I'm definitely, you know, my wife will tell you, she's like, Chris, we have to go on holiday sometime. I'm always trying, always working, but it's super important to do that. And James, who's listening, whenever I leave the office, I'm like, James, make sure you go home. Don't be, because it's very easy just to get wrapped up in work and forget about that looking hot. You can't, for me, I'm always like, I have to take care of Chris. If I can't take care of Chris, I can't take care of anyone else. My employees, my customers, my family, everyone else. And it's so hard sometimes to keep track of that.
That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah. What are your biggest sort of learnings from this that you hope to take away and implement moving forward as an organization and personally?
Well, I think I've learned a lot about how we can get work done differently and appreciated the learnings from the pods. So I was, as one example, what's a pod? It's a team. I had a team of maybe 10 people that was called a rapid response team. And our job was to determine how we're going to manage the closing of facilities, the closing of retail stores and manufacturing. I was on the retail store pod and managing through that. And then we continued with that. So different people at different job functions from facilities and loss prevention and retail leaders, HR and strategy team. So we were able to get a lot done with few people. And it wasn't necessarily a bureaucracy. There wasn't layers of approval. The meetings were all video, of course, and we just made decisions as we went. And then I see where we are today. We're doing a lot of that now as well. You know, the pods we're managing now are about getting work done and thinking about reshaping the business again, cross-functional teams. So the learning is, you know, many times you sit down with somebody that works in, you know, a merchandising leader or a retail leader. You can learn about what's going on in the business as they can learn about what's important about managing people And, you know, this cross-functional, you know, pod allows us to appreciate how others are challenged in different departments and get work done. I'd see us continuing doing that. I also see us managing the workforce with a lot of flexibility, a lot of, I would say, our changes to policies where we've traditionally loved people coming into the office. Coming into the office increased collaboration, or that was the, that was our strategy previously. You know, water cooler time and time in meetings, you can really get a lot of learning. But what we found is, you know, we can get that through video. It's maybe in some cases not as fun sometimes, but it's super productive.
What about personally? You mentioned obviously from the organization, what are sort of, you know, this is a tough time, right? To be a HR leader. What were the biggest sort of takeaways for you personally?
Personally, I've grown to be super proud of the people that I work with, those in HR and in the business, really proud and learned a lot from them on and everything from stepping in to helping me to you know, working through some problems together. It's been great to, you know, readily admit that I don't have all the answers.
Yeah.
Have a discussion with people, and you can have 5 minutes with three people and come out with a good resolution. And so for me, I would go back to agility. Agility, you know, sometimes could have been done at a water cooler discussion. We can get some results just in a cafeteria lunch meeting.
Yeah.
But during the pandemic, when we're on video, many times we'll just schedule a quick call and get some things done. So I've learned that. I've also learned that not every issue is the same when it comes to employee needs. People, you know, some are going through much worse than others, and you just have to appreciate that everyone's situation is different. You know, some have families, some don't.
Yeah,
and just appreciate that how we get things done is important, but being flexible and listening and understanding is more important now than it ever was. Just to make sure that we can, you know, take care of people and come back, and they will help us as well. And so I've been, you know, traditionally I've been focused on getting work done and looking at results, and I'm impatient by nature. I'm probably more patient now during the pandemic, you know, not by a lot, but but probably a little more patient today than I was 6 months ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, look, Chuck, it's been a real pleasure having you on the show. I appreciate you taking the time out. Before we wrap up, if there's sort of one parting piece of advice you give to other leaders out there like yourself, what would that be? And then if anyone wants to connect with you personally, where's the best place they can connect with you?
Okay, sure. Well, let's see, advice, you know, this may not be advice for many listening, but I just like it. You know, listen to your leaders, ask questions. Don't be afraid to ask a question at any time about meaningful, you know, if the talk is agility, ask what it means. If you're not sure, just ask questions. And for me, just being part of the business, working with the business, adds value to the business in HR. So I really feel like that, understanding where the business needs to go. So the advice is ask questions. Make sure you're, you know, give yourself permission to ask a question, even if you think it might be a dumb question, okay, to get a better understanding. I can be reached, email chuck.davis@newbalance.com. My LinkedIn profile. What is my address?
We'll link it in the description. On there to make things easier.
Chuck Davis in Boston at New Balance. I actually, I think networking during this time is really good. It's important because there's no silver bullet. We don't know what's going to happen in the future. There's a lot of things going on that will reshape 2021 for the better.
Well, speaking to a lot of your peers, and I've asked them what's one of the biggest things that have helped you through this, they all said their external network, right? Mm-hmm. Reaching out to other, because we're all in this together, right? No one has a blueprint. So don't be if you're listening, don't be afraid to reach out to other leaders like Chuck, or and if there's anyone else that I can introduce you to, drop me a LinkedIn message. I'm happy to do so. We're all in this together, and together we're stronger. So definitely a great piece of advice there. as well. But thank you for joining us again. And for everyone on LinkedIn, sorry we didn't get to all your questions. I'll ask Chuck to go. I'll send Chuck the link, and I'm sure he can go back in there and answer a few when he gets some time. Sure. Have a great weekend, Chuck. And
thank you, Chris. Appreciate it. Yeah, thank you so much.
Bye, everyone. Bye.